Do you want to know what's really fun about being a woman?
This is starting to sound like a Shania Twain song.
Man, I feel like I'm in perimenopause. Ugh, the brain fog, the mood swings, the night sweats, the unpredictable cycles. Many women enter perimenopause and they don't even realize what's happening to their body, and it's directly impacting how they're making major life decisions.
You get divorce strategy on this podcast, but when it comes to strategy for what's happening inside your body, our friends at Natural Cycles are here to help. Their new app mode, NC Perimenopause, within the Natural Cycles app interprets those hormonal shifts with data and science.
So I'm currently using the app and the intel is fascinating. It doesn't just track symptoms. It helps me see patterns and it helps me connect the dots between my hormones, my symptoms, and my lifestyle. It even estimates what stage of perimenopause I'm in. I love that it helps me better understand what's going on with my body and why I have days where it's more difficult to make decisions than others. And that clarity really matters. You can even download a personalized report that you can bring to your doctor, which makes those appointments way more productive.
Natural Cycles is a female-founded digital health company that analyzes biomarker data to help users better understand their cycles. NC Perimenopause is for anyone experiencing or anyone who thinks they may be experiencing perimenopause, from the first hormone-related changes to your cycle or symptoms all the way until menopause, when your periods stop. Learn more and give it a shot right alongside Andrea.
Yes, let's do this thing together. You are not alone in your divorce or this transition. There are tools to help you make sense of what your body is doing. Visit naturalcycles.com and use code DIVORCE. Or tap the link in the show notes to learn more about how you can save on a subscription.
The How Not to Suck at Divorce podcast cannot be copied or rebroadcast without consent. This podcast does not contain legal advice. The information provided on the podcast and the resources available are not intended as and shall not be construed or understood to be legal advice.
Hi, guys. Trigger warning. This episode of How Not to Suck at Divorce contains explicit information regarding the abuse endured on women and children who were members of the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, better known as the FLDS, led by Warren Jeffs. This very special episode will touch on issues of rape, incest, and religious abuse and how it relates to divorce. The look of exhaustion on the mother's faces.
Sometimes they don't even know what they're going through. Mm-hmm. They think it's normal day to day.
Leaving the abusive spouse, it's not the same in FLDS. Like if you leave, your children are not your property. You don't have your children, even from birth. They're the property of the priesthood. And there were signs posted about that said to keep sweet.
And this is How Not to Suck at Divorce.
Besides the topic, this is a very special episode for us because we're bringing back Dr. Melissa Tigges, and she's actually here in person. It's our first guest who has flown in to see us in Chicago, flown in from Miami. Why she did that, we don't know, but we're thrilled to have her. And just to remind you about her credentials, she is a licensed clinical and forensic psychologist with over 10 years of experience working with children and families going through divorce process and other issues. She's a psychotherapist and an evaluator in the Miami, Florida area. So she is the real deal. And you've heard her on our show before because she was giving impactful information on the parenting agreement, how to put your children first, and the difficult topic of parental alienation. But here's a little bit about her backstory, which will help illustrate why these topics pertaining to children are so important to her. So don't change the station quite yet, I should say. You're probably wondering, how does the How Not to Suck at Divorce podcast really talk about the FLDS and bring it back into divorce? Well, just hang with us. We will get there.
All going to come together. Okay, back to Dr. Tigges. So when she first began her career, she worked in Texas for Child Protective Services. She was a specialist in investigations, and she was assigned to the FLDS case.
For those of you who don't remember the FLDS or have not seen the current Netflix documentary, let me remind you, it's a fundamentalist sect of the Mormonism religion. Its leader, Warren Jeffs, who is currently serving a life sentence in prison, was considered their prophet. And among many other atrocities, one of their acts of God is the practice of marrying young women and girls to one man. A few facts that you will hear: Mr. Jeffs had 78 wives, 24 of them were under 17. He married some of his father's wives, which would have been considered his stepmother or mothers, and he's fathered over 60 children.
Holy moly. Yeah. Okay. And guys, when we said the girls earlier, when we said that there were younger girls involved, we're talking about 12 and 13-year-old girls who were forced to marry older men. We're going to get into all these really fun, disturbing details in a bit, but where Dr. Tigges comes into the story is here. So on April 3rd, 2008, the FLD Ranch in El Dorado, Texas, which I had been referring to as El Dorado for so long until I watched the documentary and they kept saying El Dorado. I'm like, oh, okay. You learn something new every day. So
same.
The FLDS Ranch in El Dorado, Texas was raided by the FBI and many of the families were rescued and brought to temporary housing in San Angelo, Texas, which is like the town, the neighboring town. And they were here just for a short period of time until the longer term arrangements could be made. Child Protective Services were brought in to help work with the women and the children. And Dr. Tigges, who is sitting right next to us right now, was part of that team. Hi.
Hi. Hello.
So fun. Okay. There's a lot of ground to cover. But where I think the best place to start for everyone who's listening is, can you go back to 2008 when they brought you into all of this? How did they prep you for this before they just kind of threw you to these women and children? What was that prep time like?
Yes, absolutely. So at the time I was an investigator for Child Protective Services. I had a lot of cases going on. I did not think I could go down there and do this case, but my mom actually recognized that this was a historical moment, like largest removal of children in United States history, and said, go down there and work with a group of people that no one has ever really interacted with.
I remember seeing it on TV. Do you remember seeing it on TV when they went in?
Well, yeah, because if you remember the photos and the videos, it was, even the media was confused at what was going on. So they were almost portraying you, the protective services, as the bad people at that point.
Yes.
Very confusing, a really confusing time. Okay, so your mom said, this is going to be a big thing. You should do this.
Yes. Give it a chance. Like, go down there and have an experience that most people would not be able to say that they had. Just working with people who've never met anyone. So I went down there. And at the point that I got down there, they had already transferred all of the women and children to the San Angelo Coliseum, which is outside of El Dorado, where they had their compound. Caseworkers from all over the state were called and asked to participate in this. And so I went right down. My first day there was extremely scary and hectic. I reported to the CPS field office in the early morning. They gave us some documentation, like some ID badges, and we were given sort of a cultural debriefing, or like a crash course on how to communicate with these people, you know, with the FLDS. The children and the women were taken from the ranch, and the men were still allowed to remain at the ranch. We were told a lot of crazy things, not to wear red. It was like the color of Christ, not to wear red, that they, you know, never referred to their parents as mom and dad. So if we spoke that way, they would only acknowledge mother or father was one of the things.
Interesting.
They were told that CPS was watching them. And of course, you know, they were already very insular, a society that's very insular and isolated from everybody. And so government and police, law enforcement, social workers, everybody is them, the outsiders, you know, and they're not to be trusted. Mm-hmm. So we were informed that they would be watching us just like we would be watching them. And that we were social workers more so than investigators, and to serve as liaisons between the state and the FLDS to protect and help these children who were facing this trauma. And they were not going to trust us because we were outsiders, or Gentiles is what we were called.
Wow. This is really interesting getting into this, because, you know, in relating it back to divorce, you're talking about an insular family for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. And we see that a lot in some of our divorce cases where it's, you know, this is the way that we do things. And this is to an extreme because these people, like you said, didn't know anybody in the outside of their religion. So, you know, I understand from talking to you that you really got sick after leaving San Angelo. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Yeah, that's something that I know that we had talked about. Mm-hmm. They did prep you guys medically.
They
right?
did. Yes. Okay. So we did have to go after the communication and the culture debriefing. They did sort of like a medical screening, took our temperature, just made sure that we were healthy. But mm-hmm. they informed us that everybody was getting sick, that there was some sort of thing being passed around because they had never been exposed to the outside world. And they were strongly against immunizations. And so none of them had been vaccinated for common things. And so they were being exposed to stuff from us that they had never experienced before and vice versa. Wow.
And we're going back to 2008. So we're yes. talking long before COVID, long yes. before, like right now you hear about taking temperature and, you know, stuff. And we're like, yeah, we're kind of used to that. But this was like, that kind of stuff wasn't being done regularly.
Absolutely not.
So you must have been real, like you must have been kind of scared. What's about to happen?
And they had like hand sanitizer bottles at every single juncture in the entire place. I probably used hand sanitizer 400,000 times, but it did nothing because you're all packed in. And they were, you know, it is a temporary situation. The best that the state could do was keeping everybody together, was to like have them in cots and stuff all in one big space.
It's kind of crazy just hearing you think about that and talk about that, because what we know limited coming out of COVID is that the viruses mutate and all that yes. kind of thing. And so thinking about it, where these people are insulated, they're probably passing around and mutating certain viruses that maybe you've never seen before yes. or been exposed to. And you're coming into this group and it's just, you know, petri dish.
Yes. And I did. I got so sick on the way home, and I think it lasted for about a month.
Oh gosh.
Just feeling very awful, but got through it eventually. And that was one of the things that the FLDS said as a reason to state that we should not have been there, is that we were getting everybody sick and we were exposing them to immoral ways of life.
So, okay. So you've been prepped. You've done this, you've done all the screenings. Can you take us back to that very first day when you were actually in there with everybody? Do you remember, like, what did it look like? I know you said there were cots everywhere, but what were they like? What do you remember? I'm just so curious to know what that scene was.
So San Angelo is a very dusty Texas town in the middle. I mean, it does have more of a population than El Dorado, but that was selected by design. The FLDS wants to locate themselves in very isolated, remote areas so they can practice their religious freedoms without government interference. I remember pulling up to the Coliseum, and it was just, you know, a regular, you know, basketball or, mm-hmm. you know, sports Coliseum. But when you enter, it was just complete and utter shock. Because I had seen the ladies and stuff on the front of newspapers and magazines and everything, but it just doesn't prepare you. I just remember all of the prairie dresses, the intricate braids. You know, they were dressed in these prairie dresses, and the boys would wear these collared shirts, fully buttoned up, overalls, and their hair was the most eye-catching thing because that's their crowning glory. Their beautiful hair is supposed to always be never cut and always ready to wash the men's feet.
What does that even yeah. mean?
Like out of your face, I guess?
Like as away? In like as Mary Magdalene did in the Bible, washing Jesus's feet, although they're not, they don't follow Jesus, but that you're never to cut your hair and always have it as long as possible so that you can wash a man's feet.
It's interesting you say that, because I remember distinctly in the Netflix documentary about mm-hmm. this, which if you haven't seen it, it is so many things. Eye-opening, you know,
it's gut-wrenching. It's called keep sweet.
Keep mm-hmm. sweet.
That's the phrase that they had, that they, women, like, well, how do we say it? Like,
to be virtuous.
Like, just be submissive.
Yeah. Yes. Submissive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But one of the things they talked about was that they had to learn how to do their hair the appropriate way, and it could take them, like, forever mm-hmm. to get their hair right. And if you look at it as a woman, I mean, even a man who's listening to this, who's maybe tried to do your daughter's hair or whatever.
Right.
You know that hair takes a long time,
yes.
and you got to get it right.
Yeah.
Intricate, long braids. Morgan,
you would have done so well in FLD with your like French twist skills. Yes. Remember?
Some baby's breath.
Not allowed to dye your hair though.
Oh, no, yes. You're not.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. I would be so
we would all make different
it
colors.
Would be terrible.
Yeah.
But the hairstyle caught my attention too. And I thought they really mastered that. Not that I want to, you know, make light of anything, but I mean, hell, I think we all could use a little moment of levity before this gets even heavier.
Yeah.
But that hair.
I know.
And the what do you call these? Like the waft?
The bouffant
yes,
in the front?
Yes.
I mean, no wonder they didn't let
Texas
the women
too.
Work because they're spending so much time on the hair all
yes,
day.
And turning
that took a lot. And taking, I mean, okay. So the outfits, the way mm-hmm. that they physically appeared, what
okay.
are they saying?
Yeah.
So one of the things that I wrote my dissertation on this, on religion-related child maltreatment and a case study on the FLDS. One of the most striking things that I observed and I wrote about in my dissertation was the look of exhaustion on the mothers' faces, just really fatigued. I know they don't wear makeup and things like that. They probably don't do like the skincare that I do, obviously, but they just looked really tired. And it just, I assume that they were tired of child rearing because they have so many children to be responsible for. One of the tenets of the FLDS is to promulgate the human race for their faith, for their religion. So have as many children as possible.
You also talked a little bit to us about that you remembered how everything smelled in the Colosseum. Mm-hmm. Why do you remember that?
I think smell, isn't it? Scent is the thing that's most tied to memory, I guess. Yeah. I just something about like a lot of people being packed in a Colosseum. Like
it's hot, right?
It's hot. It's uncomfortable. If COVID had been in existence, we would have all like caught it in there for sure. Oh, there's probably no ventilation.
Right.
I do remember that. I remember there were no loud noises except from the children, that the moms and the women spoke in very hushed tones, very
sweet.
Quiet. Yes. And there were signs posted about that said to keep sweet.
Oh, so were the children acting like normal children when you went in there, or were they very reserved as well?
So they were both. You could see some of the kids like, oh my God, this is less structure than I'm used to. I have toys. They don't have toys.
Oh.
One of the boys told me that they have tools to work the land, but they don't have toys.
So
and
the Colosseum had toys?
We had toys. We had tons of boxes of donations and clothes and things like that, just stuff for them to use. And CPS does always have a lot of supplies that they acquire for children who were removed. But, you know, some of them were like, wow, this is amazing. And they were playing and they were running and screaming. And you could see them getting in a little bit of trouble because that's not the normal way. And then others were very reserved and resistant. Like I could always build rapport with a child. I'm very good at that. But the moment that they would see my badge said CPS, then they would call me names. They would insult me. They would get really upset.
Well, because, and just a little note here, mm-hmm. for those of you who are local Chicagoans listening to this show, CPS in Texas is what we refer to here in Chicago as DCFS. So mm-hmm. just in case that helps you. I have two things. One thing before I forget, you mentioned before about exhaustion. I'm thinking back to divorce and people we've talked to and, you know, personal experiences. You know how exhausting it is to keep inside abuse?
Mm, yeah.
You know how exhausting you would look if you were being constantly tormented mentally and emotionally every day, whether you recognize it or not, it does take a toll. So I bet that exhaustion came from many different things. But back to when the children started calling you names because they saw on your badge, I know that they told people inside FLDS that CPS did not stand for Child Protective Services.
No.
They had their own acronym, which was something like, something about persecution of Satan or something.
Yes.
What was that? It was something. I know you're searching.
I'm searching my notes. There was three names,
right,
that
three,
yes.
Because again, it's all about the control,
right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they didn't want these kids to open up.
Well, you know, what you just said rings so true, which is a lot of times when I see clients coming in and they've been in an abusive marriage or an abusive relationship, and I'm not just talking about physical abuse, mental, verbal,
any,
all the abuses. They look exhausted to me, but sometimes they don't even know what they're going through.
Mm-hmm.
They think it's normal day to day.
Exactly. They can't even recognize
right.
what's going on. Cause they're just, you could say like you look
survival
so tired
mode.
And they're like, what are you, I mean, before I got divorced, and like regardless of abuse, going through, when you are at the tail end of a marriage, you're probably going to look tired.
Yes.
There's a lot going on. And I remember so many people saying to me, you don't, guys, you're going to hear sirens. We're in downtown Chicago right now. We promise we're fine. They're not coming for us.
Yes.
But
the FLDS, you know, is not Scientology.
People would say, you look so tired. You look so this. Are you okay? And I remember saying over and over again, yeah, I look tired. I've got a 2-year-old and 4-year-old. Mm-hmm. And then you look back and you realize, oh, I bet there was a little bit of other things going on that people were picking up on. Did you find those acronyms, what they were telling?
No. Oh, but I did recall seeing the children are actually taught to stay close to their parents and, you know, to be like silent and not, you know, seen and not heard. And so they were always attached to the skirts of the mothers, and we're talking 4 or 5 kids. And if we're also discussing the FLDS, these were young mothers that had 4 or 5 kids attached to their skirt. So I just thought, like, how exhausted they must feel.
So let's talk about that. I mean, what do you remember about what they have experienced? And what do you remember hearing about when you're entering into this coliseum?
So I did have a particular order of the day. I was given an assignment. I don't know why I was given an assignment versus the others, because the original plan was to go in as social workers, you know, liaisons, and try to build rapport with these people. I was told to tail like a mother on X-ray, her baby had a hairline fracture, but they did not know like how it had happened. And so my job was to literally walk behind her some ways, not for her to know that I was there watching her, but to keep an eye on her, because they did not know if she was the one who caused like this hairline fracture. But they were given privacy in the restrooms. Mm-hmm. So we were not going in the restrooms with them. And this was meant to show respect. But what did that do?
Yeah.
They were speaking with their attorneys on the phone, of course, in the restrooms. They were disciplining their children. Yes. Many, multiple attorneys. That was also part of the confusion. Not only did they deceive CPS trying to not share with them, you know, whose children were who, but they also had multiple attorneys to coordinate for these people.
Wait, I'm so confused. You're in a cult, you're in a very insular environment. Mm-hmm. How the hell did they find these attorneys?
Well, this cult had so much money, and probably still does to this day, that they at least were smart enough. I mean, Warren Jeffs was smart enough. You'll see in the documentary, there was money to get whatever they needed, and there probably still is. So I'm sure when things went haywire, they hired all these attorneys, which probably legally is making me cringe, because I'm thinking about all the different attorneys with all the different thoughts of how to do it all. And they're talking to all these people that are different clients in the bathroom, giving different directions. Mm-hmm. And what I'm really cringing about is what the kids are hearing, what they're feeling, because I'm sure mom A is being told this and they're telling the kids something. Mom B is being told something else. They're telling the children something else. I mean, what do you remember hearing about from these bathroom conversations?
We were not allowed in, but they absolutely went in there and did all of their business that they needed to do, including discipline their children out of our sight. Oh. You know, if they needed to do anything, it was just go in the bathroom. And we really did not go in. So I understand there were lots of accusations that you've read about online that the FLDS has levied against CPS.
Right.
But CPS, I feel, out of respect for their religion, made some missteps, because further abuse and, you know, organizing and finagling the whole situation and deceiving the FBI was all had in those bathrooms.
Speaking of children, do you have any idea how many children were there? If you were to guess, or do you have a number?
I have exact number. At the conclusion of the investigation, the state of Texas was given temporary managing conservatorship of 439 children.
Wow. Okay, 439 kids, approximately how many fathers?
So as I was mentioning before, they are very invested in protecting their ability to continue practicing their religion, which is abusive to children. So they were lying to investigators about whose child is who. And even on the identifying wristbands, they're wiping information off so we can't see whose kid is who. So we had to do DNA testing. And what that uncovered was Lab results from the DNA testing confirmed that of the 38 adult men who provided DNA samples, 36 were found to be a match as the father for approximately half of the kids.
Oh my gosh.
And there's 400, what do we say? 439. So 36 fathers.
Well, okay.
For half of those kids.
So I just want, I'm sure our listeners are thinking the same thing I'm thinking, which is, hold on a minute. So everyone is lying to you guys about whose kid is whose. You've got 438 kids running around and all these moms, and no one's telling you that's my kid.
Yes. All protecting and each
right. Other. All protecting to hide.
Well, not
abuse.
Each other. They're, right. They're protecting him.
Yeah. They're protecting
all,
Warren
right.
Jeffs.
They're all trying to protect the prophet because they lived in fear, right? If they, mm-hmm. if they went against him.
If they defect from the faith, then they are not allowed access to their children at all.
Oh my gosh.
Sickening.
Speaking of the kids, I remember when you and I were chatting before, you told me about a young woman you met, mm-hmm. a 20-year-old woman.
Yes, yes. So this was the most disturbing thing that this is the hallmark of what I remember about the San Angelo Coliseum. It was, so generally the women would not speak to us at all. But I happened across like a young mom, and I could tell that she was young and that she was a little bit more open to talking than the other moms. So I just kind of started talking to her. Mm-hmm. And I was playing with one of her daughters, and she's braiding another of her daughter's hair. And I just casually asked, you know, how old are you? And she said, I'm 20. And I had already been speaking with her oldest child, which was a boy who was 7.
Ugh.
And I did not continue further with any questions because right then some women who were listening nearby came in and interrupted the conversation and kind of redirected.
And there was some, you know, taking it back to what we do best, which is talking about divorce. There was something that you said to us about knowing about a divorced couple that probably defected from the FLDS.
Yes. So I think the name is Richard Compton. I'll double check, but the case is out of Utah, and it's a family court divorce where the mother was no longer a part of the FLDS belief system, and the father still wanted to continue to exercise those religious beliefs. And the legal issue in the family court was that the father was claiming, you know, I have a right to exercise my religious freedoms. And then the mother, which the family court sided with her, you do have that right, except for whenever it is going to, you know, harm these children. And he had a young daughter, I believe, and wanted to exercise the same belief system that would have led to her having been married off at a young age to an elder male. And the mother, with the court's support, you know, intervened on that. And it became a big, you know, argument, a big battle in court.
Wow, because legally, I mean, we have all of these things put in place, these statutes, these laws about how you decide, if you can't decide as a couple, who's going to make, you know, decisions,
right.
Religious decisions. So I'm sure this court, you know, not a lot of these cases, from my knowledge, have come about all the way to the courts,
right.
Especially, yes, we fight over religion and who gets, but it's literally who's going to be Christian, who's going to be Jewish. Or,
right. Who gets the kids for Hanukkah this
that's
year?
That's right. It's not this.
Yes.
This is, you know, a big jump for a mm-hmm. judge to make. And it is the right decision in my mind, but I wonder what the law was behind it to get him there.
I don't know. But here's what I'm also wondering. They had a legal divorce. Meaning they had a legal marriage. So was this then somebody's first wife? Because I know a lot of these marriages, from watching the documentary series, a lot of these marriages weren't legal marriages.
Right, they couldn't document.
They just happened in a motel room with Warren Jeff standing there saying, you must now obey and honor this person, you know, for up in the eyes of God, you know, whatever.
There was a reason. There was a reason it wasn't legal.
Right. But what we're talking about right now is a couple who had to have been legally married,
mm-hmm.
right? In order for them to get a divorce, in order for it to even be recognized in the court system. And then, so that's interesting to me that some of these people have legal unions.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how they decided that.
Right. They decided it based on this. Is it a child? If I'm marrying a child,
right.
We're going to circumvent the law and have a celestial union. That's what they were called.
Celestial. Oh.
Yes. And this case actually was out of Utah. So I assume that they weren't closely connected to Warren Jeffs. But when Warren Jeffs took over as the prophet and the leader, mm-hmm. he really changed the game and made it much more criminal.
I remember that from the documentary. I don't know if you remember this part, Morgan, but when it was his dad mm-hmm. who was running the show, mm-hmm. things were like a little bit different. And then as he rose to power, things got like really, really out of hand. I also wonder though, for tax, do these people pay taxes?
You know, that's one thing I can't comment on.
Because I wonder if part of being married was something with this. I'm just trying to think, like, why would they want some people to be legally married?
I don't know. But I do remember reading and seeing what they do and how they get so much money is they produce cheap labor. Mm-hmm. They basically hand out all their young children, especially the poor little guys and boys, and they make them go to work. And it's no company could get cheaper labor anywhere in the United States. And that's where they're getting a lot of their contracts.
It's so interesting you said that, because in watching the documentary, you know, we're talking right now about when the FBI went into the ranch in Texas, mm-hmm. right? The YFC, what was it called?
Yearning for Zion, YFC. YFC.
Right. Yearning for Zion mm-hmm. in El Dorado, Texas. So but before that, there was, what was it called? Short Creek, mm-hmm. which is like the Arizona-Utah border. Okay. So what happened here, like chronologically, is Warren kind of went on the run, if you will, because he knew he was about to get in trouble mm-hmm. for marrying off children. So he kind of goes away for a while. And then he buys this big plot of land in El Dorado. And then I remember from the documentary, which I was watching early this morning, they were talking about, they were ranchers driving around out in the property, and they were like, how the hell are they getting all these people out here building this monstrosity, working round the clock,
right? Mm-hmm.
You know, all the time. And they were like, they were working at a rapid pace, and they're thinking, who's this person who has all of this money to pay all these laborers? But then, you know, from watching the show, that they were told that they were building a paradise.
Right.
They mm-hmm. were using this YFC ranch mm-hmm. and no one even knew where it was located too. The right. people within FLDS, they knew that there was some magical place. First, they said that it wasn't even on Earth. Then they told them it is on Earth.
Right.
And it's called Zion. And only certain people were like handpicked. You get to go to Zion. You get to go to Zion.
Yes.
And they were taken in the middle of the night.
Well, that's the worst part. That's one of the things. I mean, this whole thing is just mind boggling. But one of the things that really bothered me seeing that was when they were taking a mother's children in the middle of the night. So if they were at the first ranch, maybe the mom didn't make it to Zion, but the kids made it mm-hmm. in the middle of the night, they would just come take all the kids from the mom, and the mom doesn't know where Zion is, doesn't know if she's ever getting to Zion and now has lost all of her children. I mean, it was heartbreaking.
It's all manipulation.
It is.
Right.
It's complete all manipulation.
And you think about that. How often does that happen in divorce cases?
There's a lot, unfortunately.
How often? I mean, there's so many, it's so creepy when you look at how many ties there are to something as huge as this cult, right? Which we all know about. You can just type in the letters FLDS in Google and be like, oh my God. And then you can be reminded of all these horrible things and how weird and creepy it is. But then you can draw all these correlations.
Well, it's in divorce too. If you don't know any better, you can't do better. I mean, who says that? Dr. Phil? He's right.
Yeah.
So manipulation.
Wow, I never thought we would quote Dr. Phil on the show.
Him.
This is a historic episode.
I agree. I mean, but that is true. If you don't know better, you can't do better.
It's
and
true.
Manipulation makes you not be able to see the light. So, but I want to go back and talk about this Coliseum.
Yeah.
So Dr. Tigges, mm-hmm. was this Coliseum where you were more of like a staging ground or a triage unit? You've got all these children and mothers in there. What is it like? Is that what that is?
Yes. So they removed all of these children and had their parents with them, which is unprecedented. Usually whenever there's allegations of sexual abuse, you'll remove that child from that environment because that's where it's happening. And if there are other kids there, even if they're not being abused, they are removed due to the risk of harm that could come to them because they're in the same environment as where other children are being abused. So that's why they had to take all of them, because they're all in this like secluded ranch. That's why we're taking all of them. The moms we brought with, because what are we going to do with 439 children? And we can't really place them anywhere just yet because they've never been exposed to the outside world. This is the first time that they've ever been outside the walls of the El Dorado, of the YFC ranch. And so it was just a safe, temporary shelter for children to stay. In the state of Texas, you have about 14 days after you remove children to sort of prove up to the court that you had the legal authority to do that. And so this was their temporary shelter until that happened.
So, and this question isn't, you know, written down, but it's just popping in my mind legally. At some point, were you a witness of some sort?
No, I was never asked to be a witness, which is interesting because I definitely saw a lot of things while I was there, but I did not get to go to the actual ranch. I just basically like documented the entire thing as I would have done for any other case in the case file.
We haven't touched on a lot of what we've alluded to abuse. We've talked about the marriages, but one of the things that we haven't talked about that I think it's important, as disturbing as it is some of the things that went on at the ranch. Mm-hmm. For example, the bed. Can you just kind of fill our listeners in on this bed situation? And warning, guys, this is not a pretty story.
So the, you know, Warren Jeffs comes in, and he's a psychopath, by the way. I did an informal PCLR on him, which is the psychopathy checklist. So I can't say with definitive certainty that he is, because I did not evaluate him, but he meets all criteria for that. He comes in and he changes the game, and he makes it to where he's in charge of the entire future of the FLDS church. So he decides who marries who. He decides how many kids they're going to have, if they get to keep those kids, if they need to be transferred to a different family, all mm-hmm. based on if they have, disrespected him, I guess. Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of underage sexual relations
yes.
going on.
And yes.
there was a
and this bed.
There was
this
an bed. Altar. Here, I'll show you, Morgan, just in case.
Oh no, I don't need to. I've already seen
Have
it.
Seen
been
this?
There. Don't need to do that.
There
again.
Is a. They built basically like an altar, and there. It was where the marriages between a young girl and an older man were consummated. Or in front of an audience.
And Warren Jeffs, he created this bed for himself. So he's in prison because he also married underage girls
yeah.
and had children with them. And he created this bed for himself. And there's there were recordings that were gathered into evidence where audio and visual recordings where he is, you know, has his hands tied to his child bride and they consummate.
Oh, it's you not know what? It's a really...
It's just bad.
Too.
But mm-hmm. here's the best silver lining in all of this is that Warren Jeffs was dumb enough. He was a very smart psychopath in a lot of ways, but he was dumb enough to leave all of the evidence in what he thought was a locked area. Mm-hmm. And he had evidence of everything.
Yeah,
he kept,
yeah.
this wasn't someone who was slick and, you know, didn't want to have it around. He had videos, audio recordings, documentation. I think that the documentary even talked about the fact that he would document all of these different weddings, mm-hmm. these alleged weddings. So right. that was the best thing.
His evidence to God, not realizing that this was not going to really be shown to God, mm-hmm. but this is going to be shown to a court. You know, I think it's important to say that it's obviously really difficult for anybody outside of the culture to understand and even absorb what we're talking about right now, right? Like the idea of young girls being forced to marry at such a young age and raped in front of an audience as an offering to God is enough to make most of us want to vomit and cry at the same time. But I think it's important to note that for these people, this was their norm.
Right.
This was what they revered and respected.
Yep.
And then they went and were ripped out of this community.
Yes. And that's what I want to talk about too, because let's get back to what we do best,
yeah.
which is divorce. And let's liken it. We've got Dr. Tigges here in the flesh. And what we want to talk about is, you know, children and spouses and the people, men and women, you know, who were abused in this situation with the FLDS, they were so used to the abuse that they endured that it felt normal to them. And I see that in some of my cases where, you know, they're living in this, for lack of a better term, what I'm seeing as an outsider is this nightmare day to day, fighting constantly, whether it's a physical or mental or whatever the abuse is. So my question to you, because they come to me and when I'm like, this is nuts, you can't live like this, they kind of almost normalize it. I mean, do you see that as well? And did you see that with FLDS?
Yes. Oh my gosh. I mean, they're in survival mode. This is a little bit of a unique circumstance because everybody that was removed and put in that Coliseum was indoctrinated by Warren Jeffs and the whole environment at that ranch. And so, you know, even if they are children, they're being either young males, they're being groomed to grow up and to marry child brides because they've been told that this is what's going to get them into heaven. You know, same for the women and the children. They are, you know, girls and women are taught to subjugate yourself to your husband. That is your role on earth. That is how you have salvation. If you don't perform that function for your husband and for Warren Jeffs in the faith, then you are, you know, there's the dissolution of the spiritual and mind is like death for them. You know, so they really cannot be convinced. And they were not convinced when I was there that this was abuse. It was only after we removed them and there was able to have some intervention there and they were exposed to the outside world that they started to see that, wow, this is considered sexual abuse from the outside world. They would not know.
Okay. Exactly what you just said is exactly where I want to go, which is at some point you said originally no one was believing whatever you were saying. It was just, you know, completely like a wall was put up. But did you see some outcomes where after a while they did start to see this may not be the right way to live, or how did that work?
So I didn't get to personally see those outcomes, but yes, there were women who did not go back once they were sent. So the day that we removed everybody and kind of split them up at the end of the time in the Coliseum, we had to send them all to various foster homes, domestic violence shelters, just different places. And we did try to keep them together. But as we mentioned, we didn't always know who was related to who. Some of them really did stay out. Once they got out, they realized after therapy and intervention, this is an abusive environment. I am exhausted. I have been, you know, oppressed. Others did not.
I'm curious to know, since this is what you do, on average, how long would it take somebody once being removed from an environment to see clearly? I mean, I think that we talk about this even just in bad marriages, you know, that like how many times do you have someone who says, okay, I think I'm done. I think I'm ready to leave. And then, no, I'm not ready to leave. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go back. You know, how many friendships are ruined because mm-hmm. somebody goes to a friend and says, you know, that's it. I'm finally leaving her. Right. She's cheated on me for the last time, or he's done this to me for the last time. And the friend's like, good, I'll help you. I'm so glad you have seen the light. And then they go back. Right. Mm-hmm. So what I'm wondering is, like, from a therapy standpoint, I guess there's no formula as far as like how long on average it takes someone to be removed from the abuse and the toxicity for them to kind of have the dust settle and see the situation for what it is.
It really is a case by case basis. I don't know the extent of some of their trauma. I mean, this was trauma, but some of them had complex trauma. Not every child there was a adolescent pregnant female, which there were about 12 or 13, but not every child there was like had been clearly raped by an elder male. You know, I would say that the first step was just to get them out of that environment and around and away from some of the other individuals even that were there, people that they knew and loved, but that were deeper in mentally and psychologically to the faith than they were.
Legally speaking, what happened when these families left San Angelo? You know, you mentioned before that there were 439 children mm-hmm. who are now under Texas conservatorship. So just in case people don't know, I mean, I think most of us know the term conservatorship now, thanks to Britney Spears, but like give everybody kind of what that means and what court system that was through.
So what your original question was,
what is conservatorship? What does conservatorship mean? If you go under conservatorship mm-hmm. under the state, what does that mean?
I mean, Morgan will answer this better than me, but basically the dependency court, which is what it's called in Miami. I'm not sure if it's a different title here, but that's the court system that's going to manage and oversee those cases where children have been removed for abuse or neglect. And the different hearings that they have in those cases are called permanency planning hearings, usually to, you know, meeting periodically to make sure that everybody has services. So that if there's reunification as possible, that's what they're going for. And also if it's not going to be, then those rights are going to be terminated in that court system.
How long does someone stay in a system?
It all depends. In Illinois, it all depends on how much they need, et cetera. So dovetailing on that, one of the questions I have, Dr. Tigges, is, you know, so obviously there's therapeutic services offered to these children mm-hmm. and females. Mm-hmm. I hope that males too. Is that accurate?
If they left, if the men left, the men were allowed to stay at the ranch. If they left, then, and they decided to, you know, participate in a reunification plan with their children, they were absolutely offered services.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then did some obviously opt not to do that, or how did that work?
I'm not sure exactly how many men stayed or went. I do know 12 ended up with indictments for their participation in everything. However, I think some did go. Some wanted to have their families back. I can only imagine that not everybody thought that this was the greatest thing ever. I feel like sometimes these people got into survival mode, and, you know, and also like leaving the abusive spouse, it's not the same in the FLDS. Like if you leave, your children are not your property. You do not have, you don't have your children, even from birth. They're the property of the priesthood. So you're just not only just leaving your religion, you're abandoning your kids. And women some of them have lost their kids because their kids are still there.
So, okay, let's go back to the legal stuff though. Mm-hmm. So they're in this dependency court system, right?
Yes.
And they're getting help because it's funded through the court.
Yes.
Is there anything like that in place for family?
No, unfortunately not. I think we see these same issues happening in the family court, but there's just no funding provided for these families who have elected to separate or divorce. No funding for therapeutic services. I think this is because the divorce is viewed as a personal choice. Mm. However, it's just frustrating because even the state will even provide funding to criminal offenders, you know, to rehabilitate them so they don't recidivate, which is, you know, the probability that they'll offend again. Mm-hmm. There's zero funding for any families that are just going through a separation or divorce, and they're still struggling with the same issues, religious indoctrination, with parental alienation, which is very similar to that, you know, substance abuse, domestic violence, all of these issues, and they don't have any services.
Well, and obviously no court system can be perfect, right? Everyone does their best. But why do you think that is, Morgan? Like, where do you think?
I think that the court systems are just so bogged down with just trying to function at the government level that's, you know, that would be a pie in the sky want. But yeah, you're right, because one of the things that I deal with, and I'm really fortunate to deal with high-end clients that can afford it, one, we're seeing a therapist shortage right now. Two, mm-hmm. most good therapists are not taking insurance.
Right.
It's a miracle if they do take insurance, but where we're really seeing problems are the underfunded communities. So mm-hmm. if you have a family who's maybe underprivileged and going through a divorce and it's tough and there are issues like our horrific circumstances, there's really not that many places to turn to. And if there is a place that we can locate, they don't have the funds to take that many people. It's really a disservice, I think, to the families that are going through this kind of thing.
It's heartbreaking. And I think after just listening to what we just heard about how much these children have suffered and how many correlations did we just draw, mm-hmm. right? Between something that we see on such a massive level, but we're like, holy cow, the same type of trauma mm-hmm. could happen in just a regular old domestic situation. But the good news is, because we have some good news, is that our good friend Dr. Tickus has a plan.
Yes.
So give us the plan, girl. I'm ready
okay.
for it.
Good ready
news
too.
Time.
So I did mention in the first episode that I was happy to be a guest on, that when I started out as an investigator, then teacher, psychologist, I was just trying to help. None of my roles were very proactive.
Oh, okay.
So I created a nonprofit funded therapy services site. I know that's a mouthful, but it's not a nonprofit. It's funded by nonprofits.
Okay.
It's a therapy services site that provides 12 free sessions of therapy to individuals that are referred or ordered to be there by the family court in their jurisdiction. My site employs doctoral level psychology trainees who are under the supervision of licensed psychologists, and they're the ones who provide those critical intervention to eligible clients. Eligibility to receive these services is just based on income, if you're referred by the family court. My program is called Family Forensic Services, and we currently only serve Miami-Dade County, but I am here today to talk about my efforts to raise funds so that FFS can continue to provide therapy to hundreds of families next year through an online fundraising campaign called Give Miami Day.
Okay, I love this. This is awesome.
Getting lighter and brighter.
Yes, thank you for bringing us up, Dr.
Not to mention the sun's actually coming out outside. It was literally, guys, it was literally pouring down rain when we started this episode.
I brought the sunshine with me from Florida.
And how funny now. It's like there's a break in the clouds.
I know, but let me break down that mouth flow.
Yes.
I can't even say it. That was a lot. So basically what you're doing is your program, you're getting funding from charities to provide therapeutic services to underprivileged families in need that are going through some kind of family court system or divorce process, something like that. But you're actually putting in the work. You have people that are doing it from this charitable funds.
Yes. We are funded by a charity organization right now called Kidside Miami, which we're going to be talking about here in a second. Kidside Miami funds family forensic services and my doctoral trainees, who are awesome, by the way. Shout out to all of you. They are the ones providing these free therapy, and we give 12 sessions to families. We're doing individual therapy for children and adults. We're doing co-parenting, which is what we discussed before on this podcast. We do family reunification therapy, which is the service, the answer to parental alienation, if it's happening. And we do therapeutic supervised visits, which is, you know, a therapist supervising a parent and a child who have that restriction so they can see each other.
I love it. And, you know, Andrea and I usually do not plug donations on our podcast. That's just not what we are about.
This is the first time we've ever.
It's the first time.
Thank you.
It's a first for everything. But this is so, your mission is so in line with not only our topic, which is really heavy today, but also in mission with what we're doing, which is trying to help people not suck at going through a really crappy time. And there's a lot of people that can't afford these services. And God bless, because at the end of the day, if your children can come out a little better and not be so damaged, or you are not so damaged, you're going to be a better parent for them. You're also going to be better human in our society if you feel better and you come through it okay.
Yes.
So I appreciate what you're doing, and I'm fully behind it.
Yay. Thank you.
I am so excited that we are able to have a silver lining to this episode. And guys, we're going to make this really, really easy for you to help out. So as we said before, the big umbrella, what do we call it? The big umbrella fundraiser to be able to donate to Dr. Tigas's cause is called Give Miami Day. It's a big deal. And I'm excited to say that we here at How Not to Suck at Divorce, we are a champion for this fundraiser. So we will have our own website, our own link. I could list it out for you, but nobody wants to hear me say all these words. So I'm going to have it directly linked in the show notes. It's going to be on everywhere, on every social media platform we have, on our website. But here's the kicker, you guys. Today is November 17th. Today is the day that you need to donate. Today is the big day for Give Miami Day.
Yes.
It is today.
The last day.
The last
day. That's all
we
get.
So today, right now, right now, go and click and donate. You can give $25. We're not asking for everything. We all know you got shopping to do. You've got your eyes on some shoes. I know too. But give something if you can, and it would just mean so much to everybody.
Agreed. And I'm going to give, because I just feel so, you know,
same.
Yeah. I just feel really good about this, but it wouldn't be us if I didn't bring it back and need to know how these women and children are doing now and what is going on, because I did see that, God, this FLDS is still going.
Yes.
So give me some positivity if you can.
Yes.
Is there any good feel good stories?
Yes. Oh my gosh. In the end, some women did leave. They were strangled by Jeff's revelations from prison. They longed for independence. They wanted to raise their families. They left this group and they forged ahead, uncharted territory, a new way of life. I do think that some still have trouble believing some of the crimes that their leader was convicted of. And if they grew up in that system, then it's been since birth that they felt that way. They've lost dozens of family members who they're now told to consider as apostates. And they were faced with, you know, leaving their FLDS families for their freedom, for their future. They chose the latter. And it's a choice that makes me feel like I actually did do something to help.
Which is great. And I understand that one of the daughters of Warren Jeffs is actually on TikTok.
Yes.
And she talks a lot about her experience. So there is someone, and we're actually going to put, I don't have her handle off the top of my head, but we're going to get it and we'll put it in the show notes. So if you guys want to, you know, check in on her and hear some more stories. Also, we mentioned the documentary series several times. If you want to go and watch it, I highly recommend it. It's on Netflix. It's called Keep Sweet, Pray and Obey. So everyone just take a moment.
Pretty appropriate. On brand for Warren Jeffs.
What's speaking of Warren Jeffs, whatever happened to old Warren? What's going on with him?
So he is thankfully serving life sentences in prison in Huntsville, Texas, for his sexual abuse of minor children. He still issues edicts from prison, as we've said. In 2012, he said that now only 15 chosen men are going to be the fathers for the entire FLDS.
What? 15?
So marriages are not actually recognized. You're not allowed to have intercourse with your spouses. You're not allowed to produce any other children except for with these specific men. That's what he said.
Okay, this sounds just less and less.
I know, no fun way to end it.
God, and there's still a lot of people who are active, right?
Right. The facts show that Warren Jeffs still remains in control, even from prison. And of the remaining members of the FLDS, there's still about 10,000 members, and they are really segregated and secluded. And quite frankly, you know, we don't really know what's going on there, which is unfortunate. Yeah. And they've learned their lesson for when Dr. Tigges was there, and they're going to be even probably a tighter community now because to hide it.
Yes.
I think it's important to say that just like in domestic abuse cases, in divorce cases, like I mentioned before, just because you're removed from the situation, it doesn't mean that you're healed. Doesn't mean that there's a like, poop, you're done now, but you're divorced. You should feel better.
Right.
Like, how many times do people say that? Mm-hmm. How many times do people make insensitive comments like, "But I thought your divorce was finalized. Why do you still look so sad? Aren't you better now?
Absolutely.
Isn't it all done? You got your parenting agreement done. You feel better."
Right.
"No, I don't feel better, you dummy." Stuff's still going on. The people who were removed from the El Dorado Ranch, they're still processing and healing. It's been over a decade. They're not done. This is like life's work. And a lot of these people went back.
Yeah.
It's important for us to say, because we do have a responsibility on this public platform, that if you are in a domestic abuse situation in the United States and you are in need of immediate help, please contact 1-800-799-7233 or text START in all caps to 887889.
And if you're able or want to, we would really appreciate any donation. No donation is too small in our Give Miami Day, on our link, I should say. So the other thing I wanted to tell you is, if you're feeling kind of hopeless and maybe some of these issues resonated with you, send us a message.
Yeah.
We will help you out as best as we can. And that's why we're here.
Right. We answer every single DM. We really, truly do. It's me. It'll be me you're messaging. And I mean, I can't tell you guys, not a day goes by when I'm not screenshotting things to Morgan saying, "Morgan, somebody in San Bernardino County needs help. Mm-hmm. Can you find this? Can you find that?" And we're doing it. We want to help you. This is why we started this show. Dr. Tigges, thank you so much. Thank you so much for getting on an airplane.
Oh my gosh. I wanted to come to Chicago, I guess.
Do this episode with us. I know people are going to want to know more about what you do. So will you leave everybody right now, anywhere and everywhere that they can find you online?
Yes. Just honestly, the best place is to go to my Instagram, which is public, at Dr. Melissa Tigges, DrMalissaTigges. And that will give us, that will give you access to the website for the program that I run, Family Forensic Services. I'll have a lot of stuff up there about how you can donate through my page to Give Miami Day if you wanted to. But just since they didn't say it, I'm going to say it. If you want to donate through the podcast, one donation is too small. It's a minimum of $25.
All right. Well, we retract.
Yes, we need $25. Okay. But it really does. I can say and attest that this is really funding free services, direct services to families in need. So please go to givemiamiday.org/fundraise/how-not-to-suck-at-divorce-pod.
There you have it, folks. And I can attest that you didn't mention this, but your TikTok, my dear, is lit. You've got some new videos. They're very cute.
Thank you.
You
I try.
You're very hip.
Trying to do the transitions.
I mean, it's hard. You are doing it beautifully. Our TikTok needs help. So guys,
I'm going to do some TikToks this weekend.
If you're in the generous mood after you donate, can you follow us on the TikTok?
Yes.
Or even how about when you're done listening to this, just like our podcast, leave us a review. It means the world to us.
It really would, because guys, we're doing this for you. We're here to help you not suck at divorce.
Because we know that divorce is hard. We know it's draining, and we know that the unknown can feel scary. Our goal is to offer some guidance and levity.
It's true. So tell your friends, tell the ladies in your bunco club. We got to get some new clubs to list. What are other clubs that you can be a member of?
Bridge.
How old are these people?
I don't know.
Dungeons and Dragons.
Ooh.
Oh, not
yeah.
me.
Oh, it's kidding. Yeah.
It exists.
Tell everyone you know, tell your ex, tell anybody and everybody, because we are here to help.
Exactly. And when you're in the thick of it, we know it's day by day. Sometimes it's hour by hour, but you've got this and we've got you.
Thanks for listening to this very, very special episode. We'll see you next time.